The mission is simple, to help high achievers naturally eliminate emotional and physical obstacles so they can optimize their life for higher achievement. Welcome. You have just entered the Genesis Zone. Good day and welcome to the Genesis Zone Show. This is Dr. Brian Brown. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us. There are a million other places you could be. You've chosen to be here with us and we greatly appreciate it. As usual, you're in for a great treat today. I'm so excited in our ongoing Wellness Warriors series. Today, we're joined by Dr. Darren Ingles, who is a licensed naturopathic physician, author, international speaker, and leading authority on Lyme disease. He is a former Lyme patient who overcame his own three-year battle with Lyme disease after having failed conventional treatment and became progressively debilitated. Dr. Ingles found that proper diet, lifestyle management, and natural therapies worked with his body to heal instead of against it. He then applied what he learned about his own healing journey to his own Lyme patients and found they recovered faster with less side effects. Dr. Ingles has now treated more than 7,000 Lyme patients using his novel approach, many who have gone on to live healthy, symptom-free lives. Dr. Ingles has been featured on WebMD, MindBody Green, Be Well, Thrive Global, Motherly, and Dr. Ron Hoffman's Intelligent Medicine podcast, and is the author of The Lyme Solution, a five-part plan to fight the inflammatory autoimmune response and beat Lyme disease. In our servant leader segment, Dr. Ingles will be sharing his expert knowledge in the area of overcoming chronic illness and building physical resilience. Thank you and welcome, Dr. Ingles. How are you doing today?
Wonderful. Thank you so much for having me on your show, Brian.
I'm so glad you're here. Before we kind of dive into the content of today's show, give us a little bit about your background so that our audience can get to know you a little bit better. How you came to do what you do and stepping into your zone of genius.
Sure. Well, I actually started out as a clinical microbiologist. I worked at a large teaching hospital outside of Chicago, and I worked in a clinical laboratory. So I had a broad background in microbiology and immunology. Mm. And after working in the lab for about 5 years, I decided I wanted to take the next step and become a doctor. And at the time, I was interested in becoming a medical doctor because I didn't know of anything else. Mm. And sort of a series of circumstances, I learned about naturopathic medicine. And I saw what was going on in the hospital system. And really, every doctor I knew there was really unhappy with their job and the way the system was working. And I started realizing that philosophically, naturopathic medicine was so much more aligned to what I felt and what I believed. You know, the opportunity to really get to the root of people's problems, really get to the root of, you know, how you help people truly heal and not just keep putting Band-Aids on things. I think so much what happens in conventional medicine, and no knock against it, it's just that it is a lot of Band-Aid therapy. You know, let's give a drug to stop a symptom, and it doesn't necessarily fix that root cause. So I applied to naturopathic medical school, got accepted, went, did a residency, and then I went out and started my clinical practice. And shortly into my practice, I moved to Connecticut and was ready to open my own practice and got bit by a tick and acquired Lyme disease literally 2 weeks before I opened my own practice. So I treated it immediately and felt fine. But when I opened my practice, you know, for anyone who's ever owned their own business, they know what it's like when, you know, you're working long hours. I couldn't afford to hire staff. So I was the bookkeeper and, you know, seeing patients and answering the phones. And it was working 6-7 days a week, you know, 10, 12, 14 hour days. And 8 months into that schedule, I started to relapse and I started having symptoms again. And, you know, I went back on treatment. It didn't help. I went through 9 months of antibiotics. I got a lot worse. And I was fortunate to found a doctor in New York who is a Chinese medical doctor and acupuncturist. And he started treating me with Chinese herbs. And it was also my realization that I really wasn't practicing my own medicine. I wasn't sleeping well. I wasn't eating well. I wasn't exercising. I wasn't doing all the things that I was telling my patients to do. And so, you know, that was my wake up call that, you know, you got to get your act together. You got to get your life together. This is going to be hard to overcome. This is going to be hard to overcome if right. you're not doing all those basic things you need to do to heal and get well. So I started doing that. I mean, I started getting to bed on time. I cut my hours back. I started eating better. I started moving my body. And it took me, even with, you know, using herbs and nutrients and other things to help support my body, it still took me about 3 years to get to a point where I really felt well again. So, you know, as I started applying what I was doing to myself, to my patients, I found that they were getting better faster. You know, it was that aha moment that's like, wow, this isn't really rocket science. It really is just very fundamental, basic things on how the human body works and what it needs to heal. Mm. You know, I think, you know, we believe in naturopathic medicine, and I'm sure in chiropractic medicine, it's the same, that, you know, we recognize the body has this innate capacity to heal no matter what the circumstances are.
Right.
We just need to get those obstacles out of the way to allow that process to happen. You know, fortunately, you know, as humans, it's built into our humans, it's built into our DNA that we want to heal. You know, you cut your skin, it heals, right? We don't have to tell the body to do that. It knows how to do that. So, you know, whether you're dealing with, you know, cancer or heart disease, you know, there is at least the capacity to heal. And how much can we as practitioners do to pave the way to allow that process to happen? You know, that varies a lot from person to person. Mm-hmm. But I look back reflectively and I realize, you know, I think the first thing that I really missed, and now it's the first thing I kind of deal with my own patients, is mindset. You know, you got to have the right mindset on, you know, how you think about your body, how you think about your life, how you think about your stress level, how you think about your nutrition. If you're not in the right mindset, it's really hard for all these other things that you do for yourself or other recommendations that your practitioners are giving you to allow that natural process to happen. So it really starts, I think, with mindset. So, you know, basically it was going through this very long process of, you know, overcoming Lyme disease. And then, you know, fast forward a decade later, I developed multiple sclerosis. And there is a connection between Lyme and MS. Mm-hmm. And so I'm now still kind of in the path of overcoming MS, but, you know, I'm still very active. I'm very vibrant. I'm not in a wheelchair. You know, again, I'm doing all the things I know I need to do to get my body to heal. But again, you know, mindset plays such a big part in that because, boy, you talk to a neurologist, it's all doom and gloom. Exactly. But, you know, you recognize that, again, you know, our brain has the capacity to heal. Our neuroplasticity doesn't stop with age. Mm. And so we still have this opportunity. I have this opportunity for myself, you know, to have better health, to do everything I want to do in life. And so that's what I really try to instill in the people I work with is that, you know, how do we get those obstacles out of the way and, you know, the way and, you know, give your body the chance to do what it's designed to do.
Mm, that's excellent. And I love two things there. Number one is that the healing didn't come overnight. You said it was a 3-year journey to get the Lyme disease under control and reversed to where you felt normal again. And I mean, speak to that a little bit, because I think so many times our clients will come into treatment or the healing journey, and they'll be coming out of allopathic medicine. And they expect it's almost like a microwave mentality. We put it in for 30 seconds and it's done. And we try to explain to them, listen, we're trying to get the body to cooperate with us. And sometimes that takes a little longer than we want it to. But speak to that really quickly, because I think it's important for people to understand that.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great example. It's not a microwave. It's a slow cooker.
Yeah, you know, exactly. I love it.
Everything in the pot and we got to let it simmer. You know, I think everyone's body heals in its own time. And as much as I'd like to make things go faster, I have to recognize that there is a limit sometimes to how quickly your body will heal. And there's so many extraneous factors that impact that. Again, it's your diet, it's your sleep, it's your stress, it's your life. I mean, there's all these things that we're trying to account for. And again, we try and get things as tidied up as possible. Yeah. But in reality, I mean, I think about just my Lyme patients, you know, I have some people that get better in a month. I have other people, it takes 2 years.
Exactly.
There's a wide variation. And you know, with healing, as much as we like to see this linear curve of every day just gets better than the day before, that's the exception more than the rule. Mm-hmm. We get days where we feel better. We get days where we kind of backslide a little bit. And people, it's just so frustrating because you're like, I didn't do anything different in my life. I didn't change my diet. I didn't change my sleep. And today I just don't feel good.
Right.
And it's just the recognition. And it's just the recognition of like, this happens. I mean, I wish I had a great explanation of why that occurs. But I think, you know, we've all had the experience of just having that kind of up and down roller coaster cycle, particularly if you're dealing with any kind of chronic illness. It's just sort of the nature of the beast. So, you know, I always advise people I'm working with, I'm like, look, you don't have to panic about it. Understand that's part of the process. It's transient. You're going to come on the back end and probably feel better. And you just kind of have to ride the wave until we kind of get back to that state of, you know, the path of healing again. Yes. But those little backslides, I know mentally it plays such a toll on people's psyche that they're like, it's so discouraged and frustrated. I'm like, I'm doing all this hard work. I'm not, you know, having a great day today, but it's all worth it. It's all part of the process. And again, it's just, you know, I mean, I think about with MS, I mean, you know, healing neurons under the best of circumstances takes years. You know, you can look at all the research on, you know, any type of neurological disease and how long it takes to regrow a neuron. It's a long, long process. Yep. I had the opportunity to meet a fellow at Dr. Terry Wall's conference, and, you know, she's an MS.
I'm very familiar with her. Yeah.
And he was diagnosed with MS years ago. He had a lot of lesions on his brain and his spine. And he had did all the stuff with his diet and he meditated every day. And he really did all the right stuff. And over a decade later, he had a follow-up MRI and there were zero lesions on his brain and spinal cord. I mean, completely gone. Mm. And the neurologist will tell you that's not possible.
Right.
But it was possible, but it took a long, long time. And, you know, he will tell you the story of his own personal experience that, again, it was frustrating because I would have days where I could barely walk. I had days where I was really fatigued. Hmm. So, you know, we just need to have that understanding that healing is a process. The process can be faster for some people than others. You can never compare yourself to anybody else. And I think that happens a lot with chronic illness. People want to go online. I tell you, Facebook, I think, has been the worst thing to happen in the health community, only because there's so many groups that, you know, have communities of Lyme patients or MS patients.
That's right.
And people will talk about their own personal experience, but then they want to make it sound like everyone's going to have that experience.
Right.
And that's not reality. You know, your experience is going to be different. You know, the way that you treat yourself, the way that, you know, you work with other people is going to be different. Mm. And so it's very hard to be in that environment and get a lot of really positive stuff out of it because it tends to be very, very negative. And gosh, you go into a Lyme Facebook group, you think no one ever gets better.
Right.
And I realize the people who are better, they're not on Facebook. They're out living their life. They're not sticking away because they don't feel good. So you get a very skewed view of what's going on, you know, with the world in a particular condition. But, you know, it's good to, you know, focus on yourself, you know, find a group of practitioners that really, again, are philosophically aligned with you. You know that they're going to lead you on that right path and not necessarily put band-aids on the problem. And again, it gives you the best opportunity to, you know, get your health back.
Yeah, no, excellent advice. And, you know, I love what you said earlier about, you know, these things, you know, when we're dealing with chronic illness, we need to understand that process didn't happen overnight. It's taken time. It's just going to take us time to heal on the other side of that. And I really respect what you said about the guy that you met at Dr. Terry Wall's conference, that he had meditated, he had done everything, he had eaten right, he had slept right, he'd done everything he's supposed to do for 10 years, and then repeated that MRI and saw no lesions. But had he done that at 1 year or 2 year or 3 years, he would have still seen those lesions more than likely.
Yeah.
And, you know, and science, the research, the literature is actually starting to show us that mindfulness and meditation actually have positive effects in the expression of inflammatory genes as well as neuroplasticity genes like BDNF. So I can only imagine that those things that he was implementing over a 10-year period epigenetically affected those genes and led to or attributed to, not maybe not 100%, but attributed to that healing process. So, yeah, excellent point.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I always tell people, it's like, look, if you ever want to tap into the greatest healing resource that we have access to, it's our brain.
It's our brain.
Built into our body. You know, we have this tool that we really don't take advantage of. And look, I remember when I came out of school, 22 years ago, it was kind of looked at as this sort of woo-woo weird thing. If you go, a bunch of hippies out there singing Kumbaya, that kind of stuff. But again, we've got so much research validating that, that mindfulness, and whether it comes as meditation or some variation thereof, has a huge impact on our epigenetic expression of a lot of these genes, like it says, that control inflammation, that control neuroplasticity, that control so many different aspects of our health. And it's such an easy thing for people to do once you learn. Look, right. I got to be honest. I suck at meditation. I suck at it. I hate it. I sit there. I try and quiet my brain. And it's like most people, it's just off in a million directions.
Yeah.
What I found for me, guided meditation works great. If I've got a voice in the background I can focus on, I still get the benefits and I don't have to worry about my brain going off in different directions.
Exactly. So,
you can find ways that it works well for you. And the one thing I learned, a guy named Michael Burnoff, I've been studying with him. He's in Phoenix and he's not a doctor. He's not a medical person at all, but he's very much about, how you, your brain see the world, how you communicate with yourself, communicate with yourself and other people. And one of the things he talked about that I thought was fascinating, it's like, the brain responds to sensory input versus just words. So even when you're doing like visualization or meditation, having an image that's very sensory, what do you see? What do you hear? What do you smell? What do you feel? Having that image is so much more powerful than just a repetition of words that by itself, the brain doesn't really interpret, but interprets pictures. And it's really interesting because I've heard different, thought leaders out there, well-known people, even people like, Oprah will talk about, having this vision. And this vision is something that they have there's a picture, they have it stamped out in their brain, and then it starts to manifest somewhere down the line. I'm not really into The Secret, but if you've read that book, that's kind of the premise, is that, if you really plant that seed in your brain, you can start to manifest these things. So it's not as simple as like, well, you just think about getting well and you get well. I mean, it's more than that, but that's part of the process, is that you got to have that visual image of, what are you doing when you are well? This is part of the conversation I have with my patients. It's like, I want you to start visualizing what you're doing when you're well. Who are you with? What are you doing? What do you see? What do you smell? Make that part of your daily, meditation, because again, the brain starts to interpret that information. Mm-hmm. And, it's just another input into your system to allow it to heal. But again, it's free. It's built in. It takes a little bit of practice, but, you can find that thing that really shifts the way your brain operates. There's another great program out there I recommend to a lot of my folks from Annie Hopper called DNRS, Dynamic Neural Retraining System. And it's all about limbic system retraining. The limbic system is part of the brain that really reacts to stress. That's kind of like our emotional center. And if we can train our brain to not hyperreact, to not, have that same event if we get into stressful times in our life, again, we can start to change the way that our overall body reacts, because your brain is the trigger for so many things. That's what gets your stress hormones going. That's what gets your catecholamines like epinephrine and norepinephrine going. So if we can retrain the brain to not get so hyperexcitable, not create all that inflammation, great. We've given you another, 1% advantage of, getting better.
That's exactly
a great thing.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at the conscious brain is that abstract thinking portion of us that likes new and creative ideas and activities. But yet the subconscious brain is very much like a 3-year-old child, a 5-year-old child, and it thinks very literally and is stimulated and thinks in the five senses. And I think that's what you were describing perfectly, is that we have to tap into and use the strength of that subconscious brain in order to tap into those five senses. You gave the example of Oprah. Yep. You have to have a vision. We have to have a vision, but we have to use all those senses. What does it feel like? What does it look like? What does it sound like? What does it, what does it do for us just on an ethereal level? And it does come across those very woo-woo, but I think that's being demystified. I think it's less woo-woo today than it was even 5 years ago.
Right.
And I think more people are starting to understand it. It's really interesting that we've gone down the path even right now in this interview of talking about mindset, because I get gigged all the time of saying, okay, this is called the Genesis Zone. You're about epigenetics, and all you do is talk about mindset. And I'm like, well, the reason I talk about mindset is because it's critically important to your healing. If we don't take care of that 6-inch space between our ears, guess what's not going to happen? You're either not going to heal fully, or you're going to heal, and then we're going to be relapsing, and you're going to be going back into that vicious cycle.
Exactly.
So I think it prevents relapse, but it slows that process down and allows us to be able to kind of roll with it and kind of go with the stride. Excellent points. It doesn't surprise me that we've gone down the path of mindset and thinking, because it is critical to, I believe it's critical dealing with any chronic illness.
Yeah. And I'll give you just a great quick example. There was a story I heard of a doctor. He was doing missionary work in somewhere in Africa. Hmm. And there was an outbreak of an infection in the tribe. And he gave them, I think it was penicillin. And he noticed that as he was giving people were very hesitant to take the penicillin. Those who did got really violently ill. And he just didn't understand. Whatever the infection was, he's like, penicillin will take care of it. It's a very, very narrow spectrum antibiotic. We don't usually have problems with it. And so he's talking to like the chief of the tribe. He's like, I just don't understand it. This should be working. He's like, well, in our culture, we believe that white powdered pills are poison. He goes, people think you're poisoning them. So it was a belief system that what they were taking was poison. So their mindset was already negative, that what they were taking was working against them. And they had this very visceral reaction.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, they thought it was poison. Therefore, it was. That was their perception. That was their reality.
Right. But I mean, I think that was just a great example that we do this to ourselves, is that if we have a negative pattern that we can't interrupt, and we believe something is going to work against it, there's a good chance it probably will work against you. If you believe that someone recommends to take a vitamin or a nutrient and you think, oh, that's not going to help, you know what? It probably isn't going to help. It
probably isn't going to help.
Very well indicated, despite all the research. Yeah. So, with different things that we implement with folks that want to try to get well, if it's a nutrient, a therapy, again, we need a little bit of buy-in too to... And I think as a chronically ill person, I mean, when I go into any new therapy, I go in with an open mind, an open heart that this is designed to heal me. This is going to work for me. Mm-hmm. Does it always work? No. Does it always work for people? No. But I also know that, again, if I can give myself that subconscious mental advantage of
exactly
understanding that this is here to heal me and not here to hurt me, that's a win. That's a big opportunity to allow that process, whatever it is, to do what we want it to do. But I've just seen it so many times in my practice that people have this really negative mindset or negative attitude about a thing. They just don't want to try it. They think it's going to, or they, I had a friend who did this. They got so sick. It was the worst thing in the world. And again, it's like, well, that was their experience. You're a different person. You might have a different experience, but if it's already built into their subconscious, we kind of need to undo some of that work.
Yeah, I totally agree. And going, having board certified in psychiatry and no longer practicing that now to the extent I did, it's totally different. It's in a functional arena at this point. But I used to tell patients, and I still do, listen, allow for the possibility that it could, whatever we're talking about, if it's a supplement or a new treatment modality, if they're resistant, it was like, okay, be resistant, but just allow for the possibility that it could help, it could heal. And I think just having that little sliver of, okay, it's possible, is enough sometimes. And, again, each person's a little bit different, but, I think being able to, just say that in your head of saying, okay, it doesn't heal everybody. It doesn't help everybody. It has helped some. I'm going to allow for the possibility that it could help me and move on with that.
Yeah, you know, and look, I'm a naturopathic physician. So, you know, most people who come to me because they want, you know, natural things. They want the things with the lowest toxicity, the most effectiveness. But, you know, it's a hierarchy. It's a ladder. And sometimes we need drugs. We need surgery. We need these level of interventions. And I've never been a rock climber, but I've watched people do it. And I think about, I watch someone, you know, like scaling those you know, rock walls. And you see that one little thing that they have to grab onto very briefly just to get them to the next thing they really can cling on. And I kind of use that analogy because I'm like, that's the way it is in medicine too. Sometimes we need that thing that you're going to be on just temporarily because we need to get you to the next level. And it's not like we're stuck there. So if I need a drug intervention, if I need you to have surgery, if I need you to do something that maybe isn't as philosophically aligned because I know it's going to get you to the next level, you know, that's okay because we're not stuck here. This is just a transient piece we need to move you forward. And so, you know, mindset isn't just about natural things. It's about everything. And, you know, if you've got a recommendation of something, again, you might think, oh, I don't really want to do that. Or, you know, that's a drug. All drugs are bad. It's just not true. And again, it's, you know, we need to think of our bodies as being these fluid dynamic beings, which we very much are. And as our body changes, the needs are going to change. The medical interventions are going to change. Correct. So all of that, you know, just keep in mind, again, this is the nature of being human is that we have this changeability, flexibility that we're always constantly adapting to what the body is doing, how it's responding. And again, sometimes we do need a higher level of intervention to get you to that next step. Yeah. And I think this coming back to the whole mindset thing, it plays such a huge role. I mean, look, even for myself, you know, the thought of going on an antibiotic was just like, oh, I know what's going to do to my gut. I'm going to ruin it. And it's like the worst thing in the world. And, you know, for a time it had its place. I was on a trip in Mexico and I got really, really sick right at the beginning of COVID-19. And I don't know, maybe I had COVID-19. It wasn't available yet, but I was on a cruise ship and I was really suffering and I got off the cruise ship. Of course, you can buy antibiotics over the counter in Mexico. And I bought 3 days of antibiotics and it really helped me feel better. And I had herbs and nutrients with me and I was eating very well. And it wasn't enough for what my body needed at the time.
Right.
So again, understanding that again, sometimes we do need that level of intervention that we might not be comfortable with. But again, it is a transient state, and it's just really to get you to the next level.
Yeah. I love that analogy of the mountain climbing. That is so true. Excellent word. I'm curious. In your 3-year journey to your healing with Lyme, how long into your journey did you have the epiphany? Oh my God, I've got to work on the mindset piece.
About 3 years.
Okay.
You know, really, that did it came later. I think, you know, my initial. So it's interesting. After I started with Dr. Zhang in New York City on Chinese herbs, really within about a month, I felt 80-85% better. I mean, that alone made a huge difference in the way I felt. Yeah. But it was really over the next 2+ years where I started to really think more about mindset and started like, you know, I really need to start incorporating these other things in my life. This what I'm doing is clearly not working. It's not enough. How am I going to keep my body moving forward? You know, recognizing again, I knew my body has the capacity to heal, but you know, also, you know, that I wasn't again doing all the things I needed to do. So that really came kind of at the end of my journey. I think it's been more of a factor in my kind of current journey with MS. I think about it much more. It's now something I do on a regular basis, whereas that was really not part of my practice in getting well when I was dealing more with Lyme disease. But it's something now, again, I pretty much anybody with chronic illness, you know, this is part of our first conversations.
And when you started that the journey in New York with Chinese medicine and acupuncture, was it inflammation focused? Was it pathogen focused? What was his focus first? I'm just curious because, you know, when I think of Lyme disease, I think of, I classify it in the autoimmune category. I classify it in the highly inflammatory disease category. So I'm just curious where he started with you in that journey.
Yeah, I think that's the beauty of Chinese medicine is that, you know, it's a whole system of medicine unto itself. So the way they look at the body is completely different than what we understand in Western medicine. And so really the herbs encompass everything. It was dealing with the pathogen. It was reducing inflammation. Mm. It was supporting my immune system. It was improving my circulation. So, you know, they kind of looked at the totality of everything that was going on functionally, and the herbal combinations that he put me on kind of addressed all of it. And then there was the conversation about, look, you need to eat better. You need to get some sleep. You know, you just need to do these other foundational things. But that's what I love about herbs is that, you know, they have so many different constituents in them that do different things. So any one herb, you know, like, you know, ginseng helps support your adrenals. It's anti-inflammatory. It's good for digestion.
It's good for the neurological system.
Exactly. When we've got all these herbs that do, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 different things, we can really mix and match them for each person to find out what their body needs to help facilitate that. And again, because they're plants, most of these are plants that aren't toxic.
That's right. You
know, we don't have to worry too much about any kind of toxicity issues. I mean, there are herbs that are toxic, definitely, but those times, most of what we're using in medicine aren't toxic, at least not at the doses that we're using them. But again, it gives us the capacity to really fine tune what each person needs to, you know, get their body to heal. And, you know, it doesn't have that same negative impact on your microbiome. Our body is used to plants as a whole because we eat plants. So a lot of plants that we use medicinally aren't dissimilar from what we're getting from food.
That's correct.
So, you know, our bodies are well adept at dealing with plant materials as a whole. And again, I think it just gives the body an opportunity to use medicines that work with the body instead of against it. Because most synthetic drugs out there, I mean, you watch any commercial on TV, right? You know, they talk about the drug for 10 seconds and the side effects are the next 20 seconds of the commercial. Where with plants, you know, fortunately, we just don't tend to get those kind of negative side effects.
Right, right. So since we're on the subject of plants and food and nourishment for the body, are there any just really, really key foods that you want clients to stay away from, or you want clients to eat more of in regard to inflammation management?
Yeah. I mean, I talk a lot about in my book about really an alkaline diet. And if you look at an alkaline diet, I think it really goes back to what our paleo forefathers probably really ate. You know, we foraged off the land. It was really mostly a plant-based diet. You know, we killed when we could, so we had some animal protein, but it probably wasn't the bulk of our diet.
That's great.
So, you know, when we look at the physiology of the body, you know, we know that with the exception of your skin, your stomach, the bladder, and for women, the vaginal area, which is very acidic to protect against outside invaders, the rest of your body more or less is alkaline. Even your blood pH is alkaline. So when you eat certain foods, as they break down in the body, they become either alkaline or acidic or sometimes kind of neutral. So I really promote eating a lot of foods that make your bodies, make your cells more alkaline. And when you look at the research, we know that your cells function better, the enzymes function better, your mitochondria function better. So, you know, we're giving the body the opportunity to do what it's supposed to do, much like, you know, we can't grow crops in acid rain, right? If our body's very acidic, acid promotes more inflammation, alkaline's less inflammation. So it's an anti-inflammatory diet, but in a nutshell, it's really eating a mostly plant-based diet, you know, limited lean animal proteins, and then get rid of all the junk. You know, get rid of anything that's processed, you know, that's high sugar, high, you know, junk food. You know, our body, I guess it kind of comes back to the mindset too. You need to think of food as medicine. You know, this is the greatest healing medical tool outside of your brain that you have. You know, the way that we heal is through diet. You know, when you give your body the right nutrients, everything the body needs to help your immune system to function well, help tissue repair itself, all that happens nutritionally. So when you give the body the right building blocks to do all that, you know, you've given yourself, again, a huge advantage of, you know, facilitating that healing process and getting it to go faster. But if you eat a lot of, you know, junk food, processed food, they're not nutrient dense. You don't get the right amount of nutrients. I mean, it might be enough to survive, but it's not enough to really get your body in that healing mode and reducing that inflammatory process. So for a lot of the folks I work with, you know, that's, again, one of our early conversations of, you know, taking a look at their diet. Are you looking at food as medicine? And very simply, whatever you put in your mouth, it either heals you or it harms you in most cases. You know, there's very few things that are kind of in the middle. So you just need, again, to think as food as medicine, make those decisions, make those wise choices that, you know, what you're putting in your mouth is working for your body to get you to heal.
Excellent. And I don't think it's any coincidence that you're spending the bulk of your time initially talking about mindset and talking about what you put in your mouth, because the two are just, so closely related and linked together when it comes to success and healing, I believe. I'm glad to hear you say that. You mentioned your book and talking about an alkaline diet in your book. Is that the, because you have two books, The Natural Pharmacist and The Lyme Solution. Do you talk about that in both books, or is it The Lyme Solution you're referring to?
No, yeah, it's The Lyme Solution. Yeah. Okay. The other book I wrote is about natural ways of treating high cholesterol. And so that's really focused around very specific dietary guidelines on lowering cholesterol. In my more recent book, The Lyme Solution, I mean, we go into a lot of detail about, you know, what foods, again, work for you, which foods, again, work for you, which foods works against you. I've also laid out meal plans for people who are, you know, like recipes, and you know, there's a diet there that you can follow. And again, you know, this isn't a fad diet. I hate to even call it a diet. You know, I think diet sometimes has negative connotations. It means, you know, right, I've got to restrict what I'm eating, and you're telling me I can only eat so many calories a day. And it's really not about that. It's about, again, when you're eating nutrient dense foods, you're going to find you're going to be totally satiated. You're going to have a broad variety of foods to choose from. You're not going to get bored with it. There's plenty of flavor and excitement. So you can still, if you're a foodie, you can still enjoy food. Yep. It's just, you're enjoying real food. It's that simple. So this really becomes a lifestyle change. It's not like a diet you follow for a couple of weeks and then you're off it. You know, I mean, I have most of my patients off gluten and dairy just because in the United States, these are highly adulterated foods. It's not like when you go to Europe where, you know, the wheat isn't hybridized and the dairy doesn't have, you know, hormones and antibiotics and other things in it. So, you know, it's a different experience.
It is a totally different experience.
Yeah. I mean, I was in Italy a couple of years ago, and I mean, gluten-free and dairy-free was actually very easy, but once in a while I did have a little bit. And if I eat it here, I get a gas and bloated and a lot of things most people experience. And there, I felt fine. It didn't bother me at all. But I also recognize it's not the same food. So it's not really fair to say all gluten, all dairy is bad for everybody. But in the United States, for most people, it tends to be a problem. It tends to cause a lot of inflammatory issues, as is corn and soy and some of these other foods.
Exactly.
So, you know, I think, again, you know, when we're talking about diet, there are certain foods I kind of advocate, at least if you live in the U.S., you probably really want to stay away from because they're not nutrient dense. They tend to be highly adulterated, and they're just not doing anything positive for you. So again, think about whole foods. And very simply, if this is new to you, shop the perimeter of the store. That's where the food is.
Yep,
everything in the middle, all the junk food, the processed food, if it comes in a box, in a can, in a bag, that's probably not what you need. But the whole fruits, the whole vegetables, the whole lean meats and fish, that's all on the perimeter of the store. Yeah, you might need a few condiments in between, but most of what you're going to be buying is going to be in the perimeter of the store. Yep. So if you stick to that, get rid of all your junk food. Very simply, you can do this on no matter what your budget. This isn't going to make you spend more money. Like, yeah, if you can eat organic and it can afford it, that's great. If that's not possible, you can look at the Dirty Dozen, which is published every year by EWG.org. And those dozen foods, which tend to be the most highly contaminated, fine. Maybe that's where you're spending your money on organic, and the rest of the stuff you don't worry about. Mm-hmm. But again, as clean as we can get your diet, again, it just gives your body every opportunity to get better.
Right. Awesome. Yeah, I know. I can't agree more. I preach perimeter shopping all the time. So I'm glad that my audience is actually hearing it from someone else besides me. I'm curious, and this is the clinician in me. So I think of disease, chronic disease, whether it be chronic mono or whatever we're talking about, pandas even, I think about it from an inflammatory standpoint, and I think of it from the immune system struggling. We have to bolster the immune system, and we have to handle the inflammation. In the Lyme solution, do you think the principles in the book, I'm going to read this. I'm going to order this book because I'm fascinated. Anything I can learn new about inflammation management, I always do. My hunch is that the principles in the Lyme solution actually hold true for a pandas patient. They actually hold true for a cytomegalovirus or an Epstein-Barr patient. Would you say that's a fair assessment?
Yeah. You know, one of the things I think we're discovering, and again, we have a lot of research to corroborate this, is that certain infectious agents become immune triggers. And right. Imagine your body treating the microbe as an allergen instead of a pathogen.
Exactly.
It engages a completely different part of the immune system. Yep. And it's interesting, if you look at this, you know, TH1, TH2 pathways, these T helper cells, which are really the conductors of the immune system.
That's right.
That TH2 pathway, T helper cell 2 pathway, tends to drive allergy, and it tends to drive a lot of autoimmunity. So when you tilt the scales in that direction, the disposition towards both tend to occur. So for example, I see a lot with my Lyme patients, after they get Lyme disease, they start developing all these weird allergies that they never had before. They start becoming sensitive to food,
alpha gal,
mold, pollen. Yeah. I'm like, well, it makes a lot of biological sense because now we've taken that seesaw and we've tipped it in the other direction. So now you're more TH2 dominant. And unfortunately, we don't really have a commercial test that measures that. We just kind of know from research that's what's happening. But I think what happens fundamentally is, you know, with certain infectious agents, if they've been in your body a while, we need to recognize that they may not be causing an infection anymore. It really may be more of an autoimmune problem. So a lot of what I talk about in my book about Lyme disease is, you know, what happens when you transition over from having the symptoms of an infection versus the symptoms of an autoimmune disease? And mm-hmm. are you going to treat it the same way? And the answer is no, of course not. I mean, if you're going to treat an infection, you want to kill the bug. You want to try to eradicate it. You know, if you get strep throat, you take an antibiotic because you're trying to get rid of the strep. Well, the case of something like Epstein-Barr, if you get exposed as a child, it's part of you your whole life. You're never going to get rid of it.
That's right.
So can you get a flare, an exacerbation of Epstein-Barr? Absolutely. Epstein-Barr, absolutely. But is killing the virus going to be an effective strategy by itself? No, and it never is. So taking antivirals and things of that nature is not going to fix the problem, because that virus potentially has set off a cascade of inflammatory events that's affecting other tissues. But again, I think it comes down to, do you really believe in germ theory or do you believe in terrain theory? Because germ theory says the germ is a pathogen. If you get exposed, it causes disease. And I think we've seen even with COVID-19, right? You know, there's some people who get it, who get no symptoms, some get mild symptoms, and for some people it's been lethal. What's the difference if it's the same bug? Well, the difference is the terrain, right? So there's something in the terrain that is off. And again, that's your gut health, that's your immune health, that's everything that kind of plays a role in how your body deals with these different microbes. You know, I'm definitely in the terrain theory camp. I believe it's the terrain that causes a lot of these problems with the bugs. I think most of the bugs out there are there to protect us. Yep. It's just to protect us. Yep. It's just something happens where the switch gets flipped, and now it's either causing an autoimmune problem or our capacity to control the bug is lost, and it becomes opportunistic and starts causing problems. So, you know, with my Lyme patients, definitely, you know, we're often, because I'm seeing them in later stages where they're kind of in that chronic phase and they're dealing with a lot of the autoimmune issues. And even if I'm effective at eradicating Lyme, I still have this immune mess we need to deal with. Mm-hmm. And so that's still have to go back and deal with their food allergies, their environmental allergies, their chemical sensitivities. So fortunately, we have a lot of strategies to deal with that, but it's not as simple as like, hey, I just need to kill the bug and we're going to be fine. Exactly. You know, we've got to go deeper than that and really focus on the terrain. So really the first two chapters of my book are gut health and diet. So, you know, we got to start with that foundational stuff first. Otherwise, everything else is just harder to manage.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. It's so refreshing to hear you talk about terrain theory, because not many people talk about that, but it's so true, because I think a lot of these bugs that we're exposed that are becoming problematic now, I think they've been around a long time. I'm a biblical archaeology nerd. And this was a couple of years ago, and in an archaeological dig, they found some bone marrow that was in pretty good shape. I mean, it was dried obviously, but they started running testing on this bone marrow, and they found genetic residue for Borrelia babesium Bartonella. And yet there was no sign of inflammation on MRI of these bones. And they were like, why didn't these people have active disease? Because they had high quantities of this DNA material in there. And it's like, it wasn't problematic for them. So is there something, it brings the question up, is there something in our environment that we're doing to ourselves to weaken our immune system or to promote a heightened inflammatory response to these pathogens. I don't know. That's a question I'm asking you because I've got my own personal theories, but I'm just curious what you think.
Yeah, I mean, I'm an environmental medicine doctor really by training, and I think exactly that. I think our environment has become more toxic.
Yep,
I think between the chemicals, the glyphosate, the, you know,
plastics,
you know, we're looking at, you know, sperm counts dropping drastically in men.
Oh, my gosh.
Fertility is dropping. You know, girls are getting precocious puberty. They're getting their period at 8, 9 years old.
But yet the World Health Organization also admits that, you know, luteal phase deficit is becoming a pandemic worldwide. It's like women are having a harder time carrying pregnancies or getting pregnant. And so, I mean, we're seeing all of these biological changes. And so I'm glad to hear that you say you're an environmentalist at heart when it comes to this thinking.
It's interesting because we're seeing this toxic effect is three generations deep.
Yep.
So the kids born today are being affected by their parents and their grandparents. So what their exposure was. So if grandma had a lot of heavy metal exposure, that can still be passed down to the baby. And so
absolutely.
Between all these different environmental exposures and, you know, we could probably have a whole nother conversation about, you know, Wi-Fi and EMF, you know, kids with screen time. You know, we have all these different, you know, new exposures, new insults that, again, we know is changing our epigenetic expression of a lot of these different genes. And I think that's affecting so many things. I mean,
absolutely.
Stephanie Seneff, who's a researcher at MIT, did some fascinating research looking at the use of glyphosate or Roundup and the rate of autism. And when she did her study, she found the correlation was almost 99%.
Oh, my gosh.
98 point something. Now, you can say correlation doesn't prove causation, but I mean,
right.
You know, that's definitely something that needs to be investigated deeper because we've had this massive rate of autism and it does correlate with the use of glyphosate. So is that a contributing factor? Probably. It's in everything nowadays, especially if you live in the United States.
Right.
I mean, they did a study of organic wine or wines in California, including organic wine, and every single wine they tested had glyphosate in it because it's in the groundwater. So even if you're a farmer that doesn't spray it, it gets from underneath and gets into your crops. So it's almost unavoidable living in the U.S.
Right. No, I firmly agree. If you're going to drink wine, it probably needs to come from France. They're probably some of the purest in the world from what I hear. I've not seen the actual tests, but I think it's probably pretty close to true that France and Italy for sure. It's so refreshing to hear you talking about that. I know we could sit here and talk for days on various topics, and we'll definitely have to come back at a later date and kind of go through some more details of just inflammation management, lifestyle management, and even mindset. So I would love to set that up sometime in the future. I always like ending the show with kind of a fun question. So I'll ask you a fun question. What's one thing left on your bucket list that you haven't done that you want to do?
The one thing on my bucket list. Oh, that's a good question. I think my big bucket list thing, I really want to go to Machu Picchu.
Very good.
I've not been Machu Picchu. Everyone who's gone has told me it's just such a wonderful, empowering experience.
Yeah.
And I have not done that. So I think that's one thing I'd love to do.
Yeah. 3 years ago, I always see a Chinese medicine acupuncturist, fifth generation, and amazing guy, he and his brother practiced together. And 3 years ago, they did Machu Picchu and they still talk about it. So it's on my bucket list as well.
Yeah. It's not close, but
no, it's definitely not close.
Well, hopefully the world will open up again someday and we can travel. And I said, everyone I know has been there again has just had nothing but wonderful things to say and just said it was just such an emotionally powerful experience. I mean, said visually, of course, it's beautiful, but you just feel the energy of the place. And I think that's very cool.
Yeah. So please share with the listening audience how they can get in touch with you.
Absolutely. Well, you can find me at my website. It's just DarrenIngallsND.com. My name spelling's a little different. I'm sure you'll put in the show notes, but we'd love for people to sign up. We have a great newsletter, lots of information both about Lyme disease and just overcoming chronic illness. So we'd love for people to follow us and stay connected.
Yep, absolutely. Thank you for that. Wow, what an amazing segment. Dr. Ingles, thank you for sharing your knowledge and your expertise. And I feel like we just touched the tip of the iceberg, and there's so much more to cover. But thank you so much for coming on and sharing today.
Appreciate it. So much for having me. This is great.
Yeah. As we wrap up, I'd like to make our listeners aware of something new. I recently wrapped up my brand new Gene Hack Bootcamp, and it got rave reviews. So that means I'm going to be doing another bootcamp soon. Haven't decided on the date yet, but that will be coming any day now. In the Gene Hack Bootcamp, using my proprietary Genesis Zone method, I teach you how to know exactly which of your five zones of optimization are out of balance. And then I teach you the exact optimization genes that you need to have checked within each of those zones in order to propel you to higher levels of physical, mental, and emotional performance. It's a power-packed 5 days that you won't want to miss, especially if you want to feel healthier and stronger, find balance in your life, have a stronger immune system, have improved focus and concentration, have better mood and lower anxiety, and have more energy, stamina, and endurance. To reserve your seat or put yourself on the waiting list, go to drbriangbrown.com/genehack. That's GeneHack, all one word, and follow the instructions there. If you have any questions about the Gene Hack Bootcamp, feel free to direct message me on Facebook or Instagram at drbriangbrown.com. So tune in tomorrow at noon Eastern Standard Time for our In the Zone segment, where I'll be recapping today's interview with Dr. Ingles and be talking about the nuggets that he's thrown our way and how that fits into the Genesis Zone advantage. I'll be answering any questions and exploring other relevant and current event topics. Most informed, most trusted, and most grateful you spent this time with us today. Until next time, stay in the zone. I'm Dr. Brian Brown.